Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Well, it's absolutely delightful to be able to say the words, "Welcome back to Blighty, Annette Andre." How are you, Annette?
I'm very well, Alex. I'm enjoying being back here. I can't say the weather took me under its wing and said hi, but it's getting better now. So hopefully I'll acclimatize over the summer.
Yeah, spring has sprung. That's the clear line. And we're in that sort of mode from that perspective, which is great. And it's always good to actually have yet another correspondent from Wimbledon, because Sarah Huntley is our usual correspondent from Wimbledon. I'm sure she'll be delighted to welcome you as well from that point of view. So it's another Wimbledon sort of correspondent there, which is all great stuff. Again, the text of today, basically, we're going to look at a number of key things, but there was something I wanted to actually address, which actually ties in with one of our other presenters, and it actually is something which we've never really spoken about before, Annette, and I don't think you mentioned it in any of the other things we spoke about, and that is the role of the stand-in within cinematic work and so on. This was a question that was actually put to Larry Nemechek, who might be joining us in the programme, which actually talks about how much time each day was set aside per series for lighting with stand-ins. The stand-in, of course, being a stage performer, literally standing or perhaps sitting, depending on the scene, so that lighting areas and even camera blocking tweaks can be done with bodies similar to the main and guest cast. So my question to kick this thing off is basically, did you have a stand-in? Did you know who they actually were? Did you connect with them? Or did you say, no, I'm not interested, I'll just go off and learn my lines?
I had a stand-in, and she did the first part of the lighting for me, and she was a lovely girl. A lot of the time, I had the same one. Her name was Pearl. I can't remember. And I was delighted to have her because, you know, she did a lot of things. She sometimes doubled for me in a long shot or something or other. And it gave me time for doing that, to see it and study the lines and, you know, work with Mike or whoever the actors were at the time. And we could do that. Because if you're called on to stand in the lights all the time, you're losing that time for working with the actors.
Absolutely. The official line, stand-ins hired to shadow each regular actor and convey any notes arising during lighting to the regular when they return. Which is, again, a sort of key point. And I was just, it's an understated, but nevertheless essential part of the filmmaking process, which I just thought we've never really talked about that in terms of the thing. And obviously, whether it's Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, whether it's any of the Saint series that you did, Randall and Hawkirk, obviously, I thought, well, you must have had stand-ins for that, but we've never really spoken about them, basically.
I think it put stand-ins in the forefront when I did my first day of shooting on Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which I may well have discussed with him on this, can't remember. When they're lighting me, I'd been so nervous for so long, and finally I was there in the start of everything, and I fell asleep on my feet, And of course, obviously wasn't for too long, but I woke up with a start and all the crew was standing there going, oh my God. So I said, none of this, put someone in for me. No, I didn't. But this is what I think, it's a very good idea.
Yeah, and clearly, I mean, I know that Phil Silvers might have actually put people to sleep in certain instances, but it's not a good look.
Won't go into that one.
It's a whole new world. So, I mean, again, obviously, life continues in its own sort of merry way. You're back in Britain now. We're celebrating that side of things there. Any plans to actually do an evening with? I mean, we spoke about this, I think, last time, or other sort of areas, or is it a case of, you know, I'm just going to actually sort of continue with my Midweek Drive commitments and we'll see how things develop?
Well, actually, I haven't really had time to think since towards the end of last year.
Sure.
I just threw myself wholeheartedly into moving, which was a huge, enormous job, and got it all done, got here, and then literally collapsed. I mean, I just collapsed for several weeks because I was exhausted beyond belief. You know, did all the thing of going right down and then coming up. And finally, the last week or so, I've started feeling me again, which is good. Yeah.
Well, we sense that. That's why we thought we'd put the invitation out to actually bring you back on board the Midweek Drive to allow time to actually sort of work through that whole process.
What a good idea.
That's great. So what advice then would you give to anybody who might be listening to this globally and they're thinking of either moving countries, changing from that sort of things? What is the key to success in terms of moving? Is it a case of making lots of lists? Is it a case of delegating responsibilities? Oh. How would you work through that?
Well, I started all on my own. I did make lists. I knew I had to do that. And then I had to go through everything to see, what was I going to take? What wasn't I going to take? You know, I had furniture, I had clothes. We had furniture from years back. And, you know, when we lived in New York, we had a big house. So there was lots of stuff there. Then we moved, we took a little bit out of that. We moved to California where we had a medium-sized lovely house. And then I thought to myself, well, I'm going back to England. It's darned expensive over there to get anything that's big. And I don't want anything that's big. I just want it to be, you know, comfortable and warm. And I have actually found the exact place, a lovely little flat, 10 minutes walk from here, from my family, down in just touching into Raines Park. And it's a lower part of a house, an Edwardian house. And I have my own garden. I mean, what more could I ask for? And lovely big open doors and all that sort of thing. But it's small. So I didn't bring, I thought about it beforehand. I thought, if I arrive in England, I don't know where I'm going. I've got all this furniture. And what if nothing goes in there, which would have been right. I doubt very much anything would have gone in there. So yes, I had to sell off or give away or do whatever, a lot of stuff before coming. I did get some friends who came in to help, and I had someone who actually helped with moving. It's an enormous job. There's a lot of paperwork. You've got to go through it, all of that. Long story short, I managed to get it all done. Stuff went off to be shipped. Stuff I was taking actually with me. I have a wonderful estate agent over there who sold the house for me. And we were in the middle of all that when I left. It's now been sold and it's wonderful. And my daughter here, I am lucky to have the family and walk into a family atmosphere where everyone was loving and took care of me. And my daughter is brilliant at using the phone and the computer and knowing how to do this and funds, you know, bringing funds, all that sort of thing. If it hadn't been for her, I think I would have been sitting here going,
Listen, Annette, what are children for if not to actually sort through the technological challenges that we're faced with in the 21st century? I use the same with my students, actually. It's a classic line. You know, they can fiddle it out and work through the process.
Yes, exactly. Listen, I'm leaving it all to you, dear. You do it.
Exactly.
She's been marvelous. So, you know, things are really going well. In terms of work, which you asked me before, yes, I have an agent and we're all primed. He thinks that I should be working. And I think I should be working. And who knows, you know, the old lady or the elder or the older lady here might just manage to put her foot in again.
Oh, I think that's a guaranteed scenario. And obviously, you've got the full support of the Midweek Drive as far as that is concerned across the base, basically. So one of the things that obviously, whilst you're in the state, thankfully, you managed to get rid of Donald Trump. So that's good. Any chance of actually doing the same with Boris Johnson?
I did. Donald Trump personally got rid of him. And I've come back here with my sleeves rolled up and I'm ready to tackle him any moment now.
I mean, again, just looking at that and looking to what sort of has been produced by the current incumbent, shall we say, and indeed several of his sort of cabinet officers. Is it just me, or is it a case of, I can't believe that back in the day, you know, Harold Wilson, James Callaghan, Edward Heath, Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, any of them actually would have quite got away with the kind of things that we're seeing manifested as part of a political, you know, this is the way things go.
No one. Donald Trump brought in so much rubbish, detritus, I have to say it, murderous intent, that it's wiped off on a lot of people. And my feeling is that, what's his name with the head here?
I think that sums up everything. Yeah, Mr. Johnson.
That's it. I think that Boris just took it all on board and thought, I can do that. Ruffled up the hair, did all the thing. But he's not successful like Trump.
Yeah, well, it's a whole strange new world, but let's not talk politics, because otherwise that's a whole different aspect entirely.
Oh, please, yes, please. I'm just looking at the bunny and feeling better looking at the bunny behind me.
Well, I figured, actually, I mean, for the benefit of the listener, actually, we're using Magic of Zoom, so I've actually got a bunny in the background. This is, of course, one of the strange things, because in the next few weeks, of course, Annette, when you hopefully make another return to the Midweek Drive, you'll see when we do the Midweek Drive live, when I'm back in the studio, you'll see the studio guests, but you won't see me because it's a case of location. And when we're doing the Midweek Drive live, as opposed to pre-record as this is, that tends to be fed into, it's all very technological. And a bit like we were saying about sort of the next generation, hand over the technology to the youngsters, they'll sort it through from that point of view. So it's all
yes.
Speaking of technology, Netflix, together with a lot of other streaming services, have just announced that effectively they're losing subscribers left, right and centre. It's almost as though the pandemic bonus, the pandemic boost that they actually had to actually boost their subscriptions, people are not doing it because of the cost of living crisis and so on and so forth. Do you think that's a kind of a good thing? Do you think it's a challenging thing? Do you think, well, they're already making millions and, okay, they've lost all their Russian subscribers. I wonder why. But, you know, How is this being developed? Because, I mean, that is something which has certainly become a phenomenon of the last decade, where streaming services are such that one very rarely watches broadcast television or broadcast films. A lot of it is actually through the streaming services.
I know. I have to admit that both Arthur and I watched a lot of the streaming services in the last couple of years, I suppose, because of the pandemic, mostly because we wanted to escape from the reality of everything and I liked having the streaming services. We had various. We had Prime, we had Hulu, we had Netflix, we had, you know, several, and that way we found series that we really liked and could follow, and a choice of movies. Mind you, the choice was small, considering our taste, but there was a chance to look at other things. And then over the last few months, I just used to fall down on the sofa and tune into one of these things that I really liked, or a movie I really liked, on Netflix or Prime or something. And I was pleased just to have it there and just to relax and go, oh, and sort of wipe away the day's events, you know. I'm still a bit like that. We don't have time to watch much television here. Not
it's true, we're so busy. I mean, it's not like those halcyon days in California where you see the days are endless and you don't have to worry about that. You're back in Britain now where everything's go, go, go. You know, we're 50 to the dozen. And, you know, just to confirm that, we've hopefully got somebody who's actually got a still image at present. So hopefully he can actually hear us, if nothing else. Phil Learness, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir? Oh, he's gone. Oh, well, there we are. He was there and then he vanished. Very strange. You see that technology. Clearly, Phil has not managed to take on board a young person to actually kind of sort the technology out for him. He's obviously in his car and he was coordinating that. And then he simply just went off into the whole new world.
Oh, he was in his car, maybe. Oh, I'm sitting in the living room and just sitting here. I know how to use my mouse. I know how to switch on you. And then I just sit and talk.
Yeah.
But ask me to do a lot of other things while I'm doing this, it wouldn't be so easy.
Exactly. Multitasking, it's all challenging and that sort of thing. So I'm keeping a general eye out on the Facebook feed because I see that Phil is actually typing something. So he may simply be saying that he can't get through, he's disconnected. It's all very strange. But nevertheless, you know, we'll keep on going. Who knows what's happened to Larry Navacek? I do know, actually, that Jessica Burt has sent her very best, but she's actually now working. So North Carolina tying being what it is. She was unable to actually join us today. And likewise, Kathy Manso also taken out of the system. But that's life. You know, that we knew that the reliable souls would be there, and we can quite rightly put together the Annette Andre special, which is very important for that point of view. So I appreciate you've been back in Britain for a wee while now, but you visited beforehand. Are there any kind of changes you noted in terms of London or other zones within that whole field where you think, this is unusual?
As you say, I used to come back and forth, you know. So I did see a lot of changes. But I do feel that the pandemic has wrought more changes. It's difficult to put them actually there, you know, out there. But just looking at the way certain places are, restaurants maybe are serving people. I don't know, I can't really put it into words. There is a sort of finite difference. And I mean, of course, in London itself, over the years, I've seen enormous difference. But then we've all seen that, the changes of, buildings and horizons and all that sort of thing. I can't put my finger. There is a change. There is a different attitude, and I haven't yet had time to decide whether it's good or bad.
It is interesting and intriguing in terms of the way we see that, because there are times when I tend to think, I don't know. It's maybe it's just the 21st century. Maybe we're just 20th century people kind of slightly displaced in time. I can actually read Phil Leonis' line now, because basically this is his point. Every time I keep logging in, says Phil, my phone shuts down. I just got in for a minute, saw the wonderful Annette Andre, and my phone shut down again.
Oh, I caused it. No, please.
Let her know I am in the Breakfast Club parking lot thinking of her. So, you know, telepathy is at least working on this basis. So that's good from that sort of point of view.
Yeah.
And finally, he says, I will try to be at a more conducive environment next Wednesday. Because obviously, technically, Phil does have a weekly slot with us. So we'd see how things develop. So we'll just see how things go on that basis.
But there are changes. The biggest change I've found, now that I'm actually living here and with what I've had to contend with in terms of paperwork, getting in touch with companies saying, I'm leaving, I need to have that service cut off, I need to do this, calling from here, looking after your bank accounts, which I've done for years. You know, I've also had one here in England, and I've also had one in America. Now, I've come across so many ridiculous fences, because now you try to get into your bank account in America, and you've got your security things, you know, your words and passwords and everything, and you do, but then you want to transfer some money into another account. They have to verify that it's you, despite all the thing I've done. Now, I said, fine. So I had bought last year or the year before it is an iPhone to contend with a lot of this stuff being. And so I said, yes, I have an iPhone. And I'd given them my iPhone in America. That was fine. When I came back here, I couldn't keep the number. So I had to have a new number. And I sent it out to a lot of people, etc. But the bank won't accept an iPhone with a number outside of America. You know, we are America. You can't possibly be anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I've had a terrible time. Yeah. Eventually, I had to have a friend in America that they would text the verifying number to, the code, and he would have to be ready, and he'd text it back to me so that I could get into my own account. I mean, how stupid is that?
To me, Annette, it just says one thing. I mean, we've covered, obviously, stand-ins. We've covered the political situation. Now, of course, we're into the banking industry. This has got to be the sequel to your next memoir. I mean, this has got to be the next one that's coming through there. I mean,
called Locked Doors.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I do empathize because it is extraordinary. We did a feature a couple of weeks ago with Francine Lewis, an impressionist who sadly was the victim of identity theft and fraud with respect to the sequence. And I appreciate that there is a need to be very cautious, to be very important. I mean, I've taken telephone calls from people who actually claimed that I was doing certain work. No, absolutely not. I haven't actually sort of made this a system, etc. And usually you find that if I actually simply put the phone down, it is something which is there. But at the same time, I don't think that the banks themselves necessarily help themselves or their customers by basically at least being on their side. Because I think it's fair to say that neither of us, Annette, are indeed terrorists. You know, we're not people who are likely to be laundering billions of dollars to actually fund various machinations across the base. Yeah. Unless I've misjudged you all these years. I mean, I think that's...
you never know.
Yeah, deep cover. But, you know, it is something where we don't seem to have that situation where it's almost as though the T word, trust, has kind of gone completely. And you think, well, this is not helpful, especially when you're dealing with automatons and machine algorithms and so on.
Oh, the number of times, you know, I've had to phone America for a lot of these services. I don't phone on my iPhone. Luckily, I've got a landline here. You have to hold on. I mean, you hold on and you hold on. And it's quite often half an hour that you're just holding. And they keep coming, these voices keep coming. And like, well, is there something you want to do? And I'm yelling, get off the I'm going to murder you.
And talking
to robots. it's just, things like that, that is just infuriating how difficult it is, particularly for me and for people who are older that haven't been using things for hundreds, years and years and years. Anushka, my daughter, just goes through it like this. I mean, she's brilliant. Thank goodness I've got her here. But it's so fearful. It makes you very afraid. But my money's in there. What am I going to do? I can't jump on a plane and go back and pick it up and come back. You know.
Yes, anyway, I think in terms of irritating phrases, your call is important to us. Please call. Please try again. Please stay on the line. You are number 7 in this particular number. It doesn't help the issue, but there we are.
It doesn't help. You just want to really get in there and squeeze them.
Exactly. Anyway, it's a good way of actually practicing the Alexandra technique, I think, for relaxation, if nothing else. That's that's important there to breathe and remember to let that whole process to go through. So it's the gentle art of allowing, I think, sometimes. And actually, maybe the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu had it right, as indeed does His Holiness the Dalai Lama, where we need to actually sometimes, when we're faced with that irritation, simply give blessings to the technology and allow it to pass, which I think is fine, really.
Okay. I'll try and bear that in mind.
Just a thought. And it's been terrific, Shay. This is the first time in a long time we've actually just done a one-to-one system. I mean, again, not necessarily structured as that, because it was clearly a case of having to juggle around a wee bit. We had hoped that Phil Learness and Larry Nemeshek would be with us, a couple of others. That's okay. But have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the midweek drive today? Has it been okay for yourself? Your first one from Wimbledon, of course. Or Fulham, I should say. Wimbledon.
Alex, I always have an interesting conversation with you. The wonderful thing is that no matter what, we can always laugh. And that's important.
Absolutely. Sense of humour, essential to the whole thing.
If
only they could actually sort of realise that there was much more to be joyful for, maybe we'd sort out the Ukraine situation as well, basically. Vladimir, just have a laugh, you know, just ease back. Poor thing. Both Vladimirs. Anyway.
I don't think Putin has heard of anything called a laugh.
Very sage point, I think, which might actually be quoted in all sorts of ways. So then, can we look forward to inviting you back again in the very near future? Will you come back and join us again?
Oh, I certainly will. I always enjoy this. I do.
It seems as though we're living in a world where actually sorting businesses out is a lot simpler than it used to be, according to all the technology that's happening there. But is the technology also a challenge as well? Because fraudsters seem to be netting more cash than ever from scams. As a result of this, Barclays are just one of the people who are actually urging people to stay vigilant when paying their bills or indeed changing suppliers. All because, of course, of the data scenario that we've actually got within this whole field. And to talk us through this whole world of data analysis, we've got two fabulous folk who are actually with us present. And in fact, I'm just going to actually allow them to introduce themselves. So let's start off with the wonderful Benjamin. How are you?
Very well, Alex. Yeah, great. My name's Ben, and I run a company called Mob, which is an online recipe platform. We make recipe videos that showcase good, cheap, delicious recipes that anyone can cook.
Which is excellent from that point of view. And we've also got Joseph Cooksey. Joseph, would you like to introduce yourself as well, please?
Yeah, certainly, Alex. So I'm head of business digital education at Barclays. My team help businesses improve their relationship with digital, and that includes helping them to protect themselves against the cyber criminals.
Excellent. Well, let's come to you first, because obviously we talked about this concern that Barclays actually have. And I mean, I'm talking about obviously the whole notion that we've got so many things to do as a business in whichever state you're actually based within that. I mean, a poll has actually shown that 85% of UK businesses show that they're worried about the effect of price hikes on their business, etc. How can they solve this simply and effectively?
So I think that the key is for them to be aware of the threats that are out there. As you say, 85% of businesses from our recent research are looking to change supplier in order to mitigate the price rise. That provides an opportunity for the scammers out there to attack them through invoice frauds. So it's important that they make sure that any provider that they switch to is legitimate, make sure that they've done their homework, look them up online, and make sure that they look like they're a legitimate business. But it's not just the new suppliers that they're at risk from. So the criminals can hack their emails intercept existing supplier invoices and alter the details as well. So they should really, on any invoice that they're paying, make sure that they call someone that they know within the business, if they've got a known person. If not, get a number not on the invoice, and make sure that the payment details are correct before they make the payment.
Ben, returning to yourself, obviously as the founder of Mob, you're somebody who obviously believes that the pressures business people are under could make it easier for them to be scammed. Is the sort of thing that Joe just mentioned there something which will definitely help, or is it just a case of, I just don't know?
No, absolutely. All of that advice and guidance is incredibly helpful because, you know, as Joe was mentioning, it is, you know, massively on the rise at the moment. So, you know, even when you're not changing suppliers, it can still be a threat. So you just need to make sure that, you know, every single point where you're about to make payments, you need to go through a series of checks in order to, you know, be sure that you're not dealing with a fraudster. But especially in the moments as well for us, I know for, you know, lots of small business owners, you're always looking to cut costs where you can and looking for new suppliers. And, you know, that is another particular moment where, You know, in the pursuit of cheaper costs, you can probably drop your guard in other areas. And that's exactly the point at which fraudsters can get in. And, you know, in the worst case scenarios, you could end up losing a lot of money.
I mean, Joe, just taking that on board, I mean, it's interesting that we're encouraged, obviously, to switch as a matter of course from that point of view to obviously make those savings. Do you think that there's been a hike in terms of how invoice scams in particular have actually been growing over the last few months as well?
Absolutely. So actually, we've seen a slight reduction in the number of successful attempts, but an increase in the value. So it's an average of £2,100 over the last 3 months has been lost to fraudsters through this type of scam. And that suggests that they're being a bit more targeted as well. So they've hacked into the emails of either the business or their supplier and are waiting for the right opportunity to be able to be successful in their scam. That's why it's so important as well to protect yourself by not clicking on links and opening attachments in emails until you're absolutely sure that they're legitimate as well, to add that extra layer of protection.
And those three elements that you just sort of alluded to, basically, it's kind of three key things, really. Don't click on links and attachment, know your suppliers, and presumably also do your research.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if someone calls you and is offering to give you a price that's very competitive against your supplier, before you send them any funds or even sign up to anything, it's really important to do your research, make sure that they're legitimate, and that they've got a business presence that you can research online, or check with other businesses that they're using that supplier, so that you're not being duped into sending money to one of the fraudsters.
Ben, have you had any challenges such as this yourself, where you've just been a little bit suspicious and you've thought, oh, I don't know about this, never heard about them before? I mean, have you actually potentially been a victim yourself of online fraud?
I have to say we're very fortunate that we haven't been scammed, but I can see how other businesses might have fallen victim to it, you know, in the pursuit of looking to cut costs, or, you know, generally just in the, you know, hectic day to day with so many different spinning plates. I mean, that's something that, you know, I experience and definitely aware of. You know, there's finance, but then there's all other areas of the business, ops, personnel, you know, creative, anything that you're, all of the different touch points of the business. And it means that it just makes it really easy for tiny little things to slip through the gap. So something that, you know, we do at our business is that a lot of our new inquiries come through our kind of hello inbox. And I make sure that the people that are managing that inbox and that are looking, you know, at the new bits that are coming in are always being super vigilant about checking the details of anyone that we know we're potentially looking to work with, by, you know, implementing all the things that Joe has mentioned throughout this call. So, yeah.
Seems it all boils down to a lack of trust, which ultimately, Joe, surely business needs to function on actually having trust. I know it can be seen as a dirty word sometimes, but, you know, what Ben's just said about having to check everybody, check everything, etc. It's a sad situation, but unfortunately, it seems to be an inevitable one.
It is. And I think that there are many, many benefits from engaging in digital for a business. So Ben's business is able to scale because of the digital tools available to it. But as with everything, you need to mitigate the risk. So I think business still can be built on trust, but it's putting that work in at the start of the relationship and continuing to check to make sure that it is all legitimate is really key for anybody.
And how can people find out more details, Joseph, about business digital safety at Barclays?
So we have loads of support available for businesses on our Barclays Business Health Hub. So you just need to search Barclays Business Health Hub on your favourite search engine. It'll take you to lots of articles, including how you can help protect yourselves against frauds and scams.
And Benjamin, as far as mob is concerned, not that we're looking at engaging the mafia, please no, but in terms of the mob, how can people find out more details about that?
For all of our affordable recipes, just go to mobkitchen.co.uk and hope you find something nice to cook.
Benjamin Labus, founder of Mob, and of course Joseph Cooksey from Barclays, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and may your online transactions always be safe ones, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Is it the most important meal of the day? What you might well say. Well, breakfast, of course. Why is it such an important aspect, according to, well, regular sort of folk going all the way back to the 20th century? Well, perhaps the best person to actually speak to about the importance of breakfast is one of the best broadcasters ever, certainly when it comes to early morning television and radio shows. That's Makita Oliver. How are you, Makita?
Alex, what an intro. Thank you so much.
It's always a delight to connect with your good self. And let's talk a bit about breakfast, because I know within the broadcast world, there is this tendency to say, oh, I'll skip that, I'll eat it later, etc. But this particular research that's come across in terms of the importance of a decent breakfast from New York Bakery, of course, home of the bagel. Why is it such an important thing, Makita?
Well, I think I've been on TV for 22 years and it's a very busy, busy life. And I didn't really look after myself, never mind what I was having for breakfast, for a long time. And I think when I got into a place where I really started to think about that meal and what I was going to have before I started my day, it was alongside becoming a time of nurturing myself in a different way and looking after myself in a different way. And I think for me, I need the fuel, Alex. I do a lot of skipping and I need something that's going to pump me up or nourish me once I've finished one of my morning skips and ready for a really busy day. So bagels for me, they just do the job.
And of course, you can add so many things to a bagel to actually make it a little bit more flavoursome, presumably. Although I don't notice any sign of porridge, which I was always told is great if you want to actually have a bagel with porridge that can actually give you the necessary sort of slow burn during the day.
Well, quite. I mean, double slow burn. You will be ready for the day if you have a bowl of porridge with a bagel on the side. Yeah. You're fueled up. But I think it's also a chance to be a bit more exciting and do things that kind of elevate our minds. Do you know what I mean? What do I want to put in this? How many layers do I want to have? Kind of gets your mind ticking for the day rather than just stirring a bowl of porridge.
You think that more and more people are beginning to recognise the importance of eating breakfast? I mean, when I ask my students on a regular basis at Lincoln, what do they have for breakfast? They tend to say, didn't have any, or maybe a slice of toast or something. And I just think, that's not good.
It's not good. And I think it's something that we have learned, you know, in the pandemic, we had hours and hours to make breakfast, you know. And I think when our busy lives kind of came back, it's really important to remember to have that little bit of balance and to remember what we took from those crazy last 2 years of all of our lives, which is a little bit of self-care, you know, doing something for yourself and trying to have some fun before the busy day, you know. Where's the harm in that? And I think with bagels as well, you can get lots of inspiration. I mean, if you go to the New York Bakery Co. Instagram, there's a lot of inspiration on different fillings and stuff. So you can kind of, the world is your oyster with a bagel.
Do you think that the death knell is now being sounded for the full English, that actually that whole notion of a full English breakfast is probably going to be consigned to history?
Well, I'm very proud of our fry-ups and I hope they don't get consigned to history. But what I would say is just shove them in a bagel. I love a bagel with sausage and eggs. Absolutely.
Well,
that's beans on the side. So, yeah.
That clearly sort of opens up a whole new aspects of things to actually work through. See, I'm so excited, Makita. I can't even actually get the words out in one coherent order. Clearly, I haven't had breakfast. That's the problem.
Clearly, haven't had your bagel yet, have you?
No, exactly. So what is your own personal favourite breakfast of choice then, Makita?
Well, I really like savory breakfasts, and also I'm Caribbean, so we really like that mixture of sweet and salty. Like, so we have like bun, and we would have cheese and bun. So my version of that is to have like cheese or tuna fish or salmon with my bagel, because you know bagels are quite sweet, and I love that mixing of like protein, kind of lunchy food, but in my bagel. That's for me. That's mine. Yum. Yes.
I'm often looked at quite curiously when I mention that I quite like a tuna fish sandwich for breakfast, but
I totally understand. Stick tuna in a bagel, and that's, you know, I live in Hackney, so I'm around a lot of the Jewish bakeries, and that's a filling that everyone really loves. So I love to do that with my New York Bakery Co. Bagel, just shove tuna fish and mayonnaise in it.
And I noticed that there doesn't seem to be a sign for what seems to be growing in popularity, the avocado on toast for breakfast.
But you could definitely stick an avocado in a bagel. My God, yeah.
It's a way forward. Remind us, Makita, where can people go to find out further details from the New York Bakery online to actually be inspired for more breakfast treats?
Yes, if you go to newyorkbakeryco.com, go to their website or go to their Instagram, and you can really get inspired about different ways to perk up your morning and elevate your breakfast.
Nikita Oliver, broadcaster extraordinaire, huge thanks and happy breakfasting.
Happy breakfasting.
Authenticity, it's one of the key words when it comes to human relationships and dealings, and actually that leads on to trust. And if you don't have authenticity or trust, well, pretty much you've got a problem, as indeed it would seem from a recent survey which suggested that, according to UK Finance, almost three quarters of 18 to 34-year-olds have been contacted by an impersonation scammer. Okay, it may seem a little bit crass to actually say, okay, if we're going to talk about impersonation scammers, let's talk to the nation's greatest impersonator and impressionist extraordinaire. But actually, there is a key aspect to this, because astonishingly, she's also been the victim, tragically, of an impersonation scam. It, of course, is the fabulous Francine Lewis. How are you, Francine?
Good morning. I'm okay. I'm good. I'm really happy to be doing this campaign. It's really important that we make people aware of how many scams that there are around, whether it be a scam online, whether it be anything, whether it's for your bank, through, I mean, people now scamming the police, turning up at your house, and it could be a scam. So it could be people we trust, you know, the government, as I said, your bank and utility. It could be anything. We just need to be really aware and stop and think before we hand any money over.
Well, this is the critical part, of course, but let's just share your own particular story, because you went through a fairly traumatic scam which cost you nigh on £90,000 in terms of the actual process. So just, again, outline the story, please.
The long and the short of it is my husband, you know, was at the time, like so many people, want to make their money, you know, more, you know, just keep... kind of, you know, investing and doing stuff with your money, because it's so hard out there, you know, and you hear so much, you know, you can do this, and there's all these different coins, and there's these different people investing all sorts, wines. And he just looked into, you know, investing his money in stocks and shares. And I think he just got caught out at, a really vulnerable time, because he was looking into it and he got cold called, and these people didn't give up, and he got suckered in, basically, and then suckered me in. And but it all looked so authentic that you would never have thought this was a scam, when you could see everything, you could do your own logins, you were speaking to these people regular. I did have a gut feeling, because I'm very aware of things, you know, even when somebody sends me something on my social media and says click this and blah blah blah, I don't, because I don't trust it. So for me to be caught out, I found that quite hard to take in, because it's just something that I would never normally do. Like you say, I'm an impersonator, I should be able to see through these people.
In a real sense, Francine, maybe not, because the days where we could actually identify, well, I don't have any relatives in Nigeria who actually are likely to give me several billion pounds if I give them all my bank details. You know, the early days of the Wild West of the internet and so on, it was fairly straightforward. We kind of had a sense of, I don't think so. But actually, the level of sophistication that these con artists have actually moved into now is at a whole new level. And I think, you know, there is the notion that people will say, it's only if you're kind of in your elderly years, in your sort of, if you're over 60 or whatever, or 70, you might sort of think, oh, well, you could be suckered into that, and that'd be dreadful, of course. And that clearly is the case. But this is something which can literally target anybody. And you do have to be on your guard all the time.
And like you said, you know, UK Finance, you know, shown that people under 35 are more at risk. Like you said before, it was always the older people. And funny enough, when we got scammed, we did end up in a WhatsApp group. We found other people that had been scammed by this company, the Fomax Capital, because I went on a show called Rip Off Britain to make people aware. So a lot of people came forward to me and said that this had happened to them, and there was quite a few elderly people, as well as young people, and I do think it is really important, because young people now, I mean, I have a daughter of 19, And I have to make her aware all the time. And she'll go, oh, mum, the bank have written to me. Oh, this one. That. I say, are you sure? Do not hand any money. Do not put your money anywhere without you finding out every single detail. Stop, which is obviously what the campaign is about. Stop, think, and just don't hand your money out until you know every single detail.
Or indeed give any personal details or identity details or any things at all, because that could be a whole other nightmare.
I tell my kids all the time.
About three quarters of, or almost three quarters of 18 to 34-year-olds have been targeted by impersonation fraudsters. They've fallen for the scam, etc. Okay, let's look at worst case scenario. If somebody's listening to this and they have actually been the victim of a fraud, identity theft, etc., what would your advice be?
My advice would be straight away, you do contact Action Fraud. 100%, you have to. You contact your bank immediately. Because, you know, hopefully your bank will be, I mean, I'm with Lloyds, I'm still with Lloyds. They did everything they could, you know, to help. So did Action Fraud, you know, it's really important you call them straight away. If you think you have been frauded, it's really important. If you think you've had a scam or you're just not sure about something, investigate it and do all the right things first. Contact your bank, contact Action Fraud, 100%. And go onto the Take 5 to Stop Fraud campaign website, because all the information is there and it will tell you everything. So it's really important that you do that. And we have people like Take 5 to help us.
I was going to say, in terms of, say, the next stage to actually find out details and the best way to actually follow advice from that, would you actually just share the website once again, Francine?
Yeah, Take 5 to Stop Fraud. Go onto their website. It's a fantastic campaign. I'm so happy I'm involved and proud to be involved in this, because if I could help anybody not go through what my family went through, it would make me feel so happy and so satisfied, because, you know, it put my family through a lot of strain. You know, it made us ill. My daughter was having anxiety. I remember we went away just for a couple of nights. We got out of the house because she started feeling like these people were watching us. She was, you know, she was getting anxious, and even getting away for a couple of days, I remember her getting up in the night with hot sweats, where she was getting these anxiety attacks from nerves. It really affected my daughter. It really, really did. She thought these people were out to get us and they were going to come and do something else. So it really has, you know, a knock-on effect to all of you.
Absolutely. Well, Take 5, and then take 5 minutes always to just step aside and don't actually sort of respond to these kind of things. The likelihood is, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I know it's an old maxim, but that's the classic line we need to work through. I'm intrigued, actually, Francine, when you were actually on Rip Off Britain. Of course, one of our regular correspondents, Angela Rippon, is one of the co-hosts from that point of view. Were you ever tempted to actually channel your inner impresario and impersonator, actually say, I'll just observe Angela and I'll just observe Gloria, and actually I might include them in the act with Sharon Osbourne next time?
No, but I did think of doing Janet Street Poulter, because obviously Gloria's always on Ruth's Women. What a lovely woman, and I don't say that very often.
Yeah, again, I've got chills. It's almost as though you genuinely were there. If I couldn't actually see you physically from that point of view, I would have said, my word, it is amazing. Francine Lewis, it's been awesome, as we knew it would be. And again, a very serious message with respect to that. So huge thanks for that. Keep on being a superheroine when it comes to impersonating and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Francine Lewis, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you.
So retirement, yes, the R word. You may well think it's a long time before you actually take up the retirement thing, but is it ever too soon to retire? Or indeed, if you wish to retire in the year of 3-2s, is it just too expensive to retire? With a new report being released that suggests that 66% of adults retiring in 2022 will continue to work in some form in retirement. Well, maybe we need to address these key aspects. And we've got two fabulous folk to actually talk about through this. First of all, TV presenter and personal finance and consumer expert extraordinaire, the fabulous Sue Haywood. How are you, Sue?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Fantastic to connect once again with your good self. And we've also got retirement expert from Aberdeen, formerly Standard Life Aberdeen, of course. That's Colin Dyer. How are you, Colin?
Doing very well, Alex. Thanks for having us on today.
Excellent. Colin, it's always nice to actually have a genuine Aberdeen spokesperson who has an Aberdeen accent or a Scottish accent. What the heck? Colin, were you surprised by this finding that actually when it comes to retirement, we just don't know when is the right time for us to go?
Sure. I mean, it's certainly very, very interesting. We see this. It's been a growing trend. When we look back, a couple of years, there was only maybe kind of 30, 40% of people were doing this phased approach. As you have highlighted, Alex, it's gone right up to 66% of the people that we see retiring in the survey this year. We think it's an exciting trend. You know, if you go back 20, 30 years, retirement was probably a much more binary event. People would work really hard 5 days a week and then completely stop. Clearly that is changed now, and people are taking a much more flexible approach to retirement, where they will maybe cut back to part-time hours or take up a completely different type of job or volunteer or start a brand new business. So we think it's an exciting and flexible trend.
And this, of course, is part and parcel of the whole need to actually be armed with information. Sue, I recently, I know shockingly enough, actually attended a retirement seminar to actually talk about options and various other bits and pieces. So I'm no longer one of the 4 in 5 who haven't sought any professional advice about their plans to retire this year, or indeed the 1 in 10 who admitted they've not spoken to anyone about it. I'm not planning to retire in the foreseeable future, not for a few years at least, but I think it was still useful to find out certain things like, bear in mind your state retirement pension might be a way ahead of your good self, depending on which particular time span you were born into. And there are things like that that one needs to consider before you can actually decide whether you can afford to retire.
Absolutely. And you know what, Alex, I think one of the things that really concerned me about Aberdeen's report and the research there was that 1 in 5 people said that their main income in retirement would be their state pension, which, as we probably all know, is not a huge amount of money. I mean, we've probably heard the news earlier this week that the state retirement pension has increased by just over 3%. But bearing in mind inflation is now 7%, more than twice that rate. And in nuts and bolts terms, or pounds and pence, the state pension really only buys you between around 140 quid to 180 quid a week, depending on which version you're on. So it's not a huge amount in retirement, which is why I think it's really sensible, as you were just saying, you know, to kind of take hold of your finances and think about the long term. Even if you're not retiring today, tomorrow, next year, look at, you know, what it could mean for you. Even look at, you know, savings pots, pension pots. I mean, one thing, a lot of people tend to lose track of pension pots. They've moved around different jobs. Some of us even moved houses. And probably we don't always tell our pension provider when we've moved house. We tell all our friends and family our new address. But if you haven't told your pension provider, you may not be getting updates to know how well it's doing. So all of that is really important as part of the planning process.
There are always lots of options available, Sue, but sometimes making some coherence out of the, it would seem, inexhaustible fund of possible options you've actually got can be very challenging, particularly if you're not a specialist in economics or accountancy or areas with respect to that. So again, presumably, Sue, you'd always recommend going to seek out a registered and appropriately licensed advisor rather than taking random advice from somebody that might have met somewhere down the pub sometime.
Yes, I would never be suggesting that you start taking advice from, you know, the person buying the drink next to you at the bar. I mean, having said that, there are free options. I mean, once you get to 55, under the government's PensionWise service, you can get free and impartial guidance. Now, this isn't advice where they will actually tell you what to do with your pension pot, but you can get guidance where they would discuss your options, explain your options to you. And another really good thing you can do, if you just want to see where you are when it comes to, you know, whether you're on track with your pension or not, is Aberdeen has a free retirement report. So if you go online, you can plug in your details like savings, pensions, do you owe anything on the mortgage still, and it will number crunch everything together and then give you a detailed personalized report so you can see where you're at and maybe where you need to pay in more money or what aspects of retirement you need to consider.
And that presumably, Colin, is at the heart of this whole piece, that the more information you can actually have and to put together makes you hopefully make more appropriate decisions for yourself, because everybody is an individual, and some people will have a wonderful pot to actually sort of say, yes, that's great, that's my retirement lump sum. They might want to do something with respect to that. They might have relatives that they need to obviously work through. They might have other existing financial commitments. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, is there such a thing as one size fits all? I suspect not.
There absolutely is not. You know, we help clients to retire every day of the week, and you're absolutely right, Alex. Everyone's retirement is very personal to them. What we believe as a company is that everyone deserves a kind of confident retirement, and so we can kind of really help people to understand what they're trying to achieve. We can actually use some great software to simulate the whole of their retirement through 30, 35 years, different levels of income that they'll need, different levels of capital, kind of various, you know, to project over various events. There's complexity there, but it all comes down to confidence and peace of mind that people believe they're optimizing their situation and they're going to get the best retirement that they possibly can.
And presumably, so also, it's worthwhile thinking from the point of view of consumer matters and personal finances in general. People might retire one moment and decide, actually, I want to actually take on board more of a portfolio approach. I want to actually do a partial retirement, do various other things. Again, that also needs to be considered, presumably.
Absolutely. And this whole trend of flexi retirement, I think, is one that's here to stay. I mean, both for financial reasons, as the report showed, you know, one in three of those you know, who isn't retiring is doing it for financial reasons, but also the emotional aspect. And I think particularly over lockdown, the pandemic, many more of us being inside our homes, you know, possibly living on our own as well, maybe thought about actually, what do we want to do? Do we want to get out more? Or, you know, whether or not being at home and, you know, envisaging that for retirement maybe wasn't actually what they wanted to do. So it's almost been a bit of a shake-up for a lot of people in terms of where they see their future and possibly their retirement plans.
Yeah, 3/4 of this year's retirees don't feel very confident that they've saved enough to fund their retirement. That's actually quite a sad statistic, I think, in so many ways. But I suppose you could always say there is always that maxim, you can never be too rich or too thin.
Well, this is it. I mean, I suppose you could say by contrast, I mean, the average saved in a pension pot, according to the class of 2022 report, was £385,000. Yes, on the flip side, one in five have got less than 100,000. But, you know, 385,000, it depends, of course, how many years you're envisaging for retirement, because in a lot of cases, people were considering they might need enough money for about 17 years retirement, whereas the reality is you probably need to budget for around 30 years if you want to live to a ripe old age and enjoy your retirement as well.
That, of course, is the point, Colin, isn't it? That actually people's age at which they finally give up the oxygen habit and pop their proverbial clogs has actually been increasing. That's obviously a good thing, but it does mean you do need to plan ahead for perhaps a little bit more than the 3 score years and 10 that used to be the case of, right, 65, 5 more years, that's it, it's all done.
Absolutely. You know, we always think it's good to be prudent when we're planning, to make sure that clients can be very confident about having income well into their 80s and indeed into their 90s. And maybe that's part of what's driving this trend that we see at Aberdeen of clients wanting for the early phase of their retirement to be a combination of ongoing income from some form of employment rather than kind of taking too much out of the pension pot in the early years.
So, Colin, where can people find out more details about this Class of 22 report from Aberdeen?
Yes, we'd be delighted if they come along to the website, aberdeen.com, A-B-R-D-N.com. All of the information is there. And as Sue has highlighted, some really good free tools to begin to give people understanding and hopefully confidence.
And Sue, with the ever-increasing world of social media and such like, where can people actually just stay in touch with your awesomeness yourself, basically?
Thank you, Alex. It's Sue Haywood Media is my Twitter handle if people want to check out what I'm up to.